shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hey, y'all.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dill.
And why special, Dylan?
I don't know. I'm growing older, getting bigger,
yeah,
getting smaller.
Starting to walk, starting to talk. Well, actually, probably starting school more like. This show turns four this episode. It's a couple weeks since our fourth birthday. I think that was on the 2nd of May, but our release schedule's been a little bit spotty recently. Life's been happening. But yeah, 4 years, Dylan. Can you believe it?
No, and yes, I can.
4 years of talking shit about albums. Well, actually being mostly positive, I would say, and occasionally talking smack.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to do it, really, is make fun of your heroes. And you'll get treated in turn in kind.
I think so. I think so. 103 episodes in 4 years. Not doing too badly. But no, we don't sweat the small stuff here. And I think all we can really do, like with our 100th episode, all we can do is give you as good of a show as we can. And in that spirit, this week we'll be talking about some exciting new albums from Parrish, Porter Robinson, and Girl in Red, as well as taking a look back at Lindsey Stirling's 2012 debut album, self-titled debut album.
When you showed me that, when you put it on the list, I was like, oh my god, I finally another person who frequents the Lindsey Stirling stuff.
Okay. Interesting. We haven't spoken about this, so I had no idea what your background, if any, was with Lindsey Stirling, so I'm excited to have that chat.
But a lot of new bands, or old favorites coming out with singles. Mm-hmm. We got a Joy Formidable with new stuff. Tusky came out with a new single today that's fucking great, possibly their best song. Deer and Grey came out with an A-side that's fucking amazing. All just hitting tens off the bat, which is great.
I haven't checked out any of these songs yet, but I fully intend to. It's just I usually wait for everything to build up and then I listen on a Friday. But it's fun times, and like I say, we got a new Weezer album as well to enjoy. Andrew WK,
who got engaged to Kat Dennings today.
Oh
yeah, I was like, oh my god, I was just watching fucking
WandaVision.
Yeah. And she's great.
You surprised? I actually watched it too. Excellent show.
And Thor as well. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, she's great. I feel like she had a little bit of she wasn't everywhere for a while. She was everywhere, and now she's kind of everywhere again. So good for her and good for them. That's a funny pairing. It seems very appropriate. speaking of funny pairings, Health and Nine Inch Nails. That's a good song.
It's a great song. It's
everyone.
Yeah. It sounds like the Fragile era in Nine Inch Nails with a boost from a young up-and-coming band being Health, right? It's exciting. I want to see a whole thing, whole album collab with that style. That would be amazing.
Has that been announced, or was this just kind of a once-off?
Knowing Health, they're probably right on it. But right. We'll see.
They already had
a collab album, so yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, that's something to look forward to. Definitely. But I think, is there any more headline news there, Dylan, or will we kick this can along the road?
Longitude ain't happening this year.
Festivals aren't happening. Come on, people. Come on. Festivals aren't happening.
Yeah.
This talk always makes me sad. You know, there was that whole push at the start of the summer or at the start of the year when, you know, Britain was like, oh, summer's back on. No, it's not. Just, you know, I got my first job.
Get your engines.
I'm feeling very privileged, I have to say, right? But I didn't... nothing.
It's like...
nothing untoward. There's a very good reason. So I'm feeling good. I'm about a week after my first job, and I've got my second one coming up in 3 weeks. You know, if wherever you live, if you have the opportunity to go and get vaccinated, I say do it, because that's the only way we're going to get out of this mess.
If your body mass index is relatively overweight in Canada, you would have had your first vaccine by now.
Just, for sure. Same in America, I think. Canada, pretty much everyone that wants one can get one.
Canada have to have their one, the next one in 4 months. So that's the trade-off for their early winnings.
Yeah, I feel family in Canada. It seems like they've sort of bungled the rollout there. But you know, I think really like gigs, and I saw Korn announce a summer tour. You know, a lot of American bands are announcing summer tours, and I don't think America's going to get to that herd immunity level, but hopefully, I mean, maybe it might be a case of show your vaccine passport at the door, I don't know, but it would be lovely for some of the gigs. None of the gigs that I've got booked in for June are going to happen. Fontaine's DC, Idols, that's not going to happen, but I'm hoping that Soda Blonde in September, maybe, you know, we can dare to dream. But
October and onwards.
Yeah. Oh, I just, God, I hope so.
I just can't wait to see you and my friends come. I'm assuming July, August is when I'm getting mine. So, yeah.
Yeah. Summertime. Would be awesome. I just, yeah, very excited to be at gigs, very excited to play gigs. And, like, small plug, but if you do enjoy music, which we hope you do if you listen to this show, please go and check out my band Drying Weather's debut single Papaya Whip.
Yes, sorry, I forgot that in my news.
Yeah, that's my news, but no, I forgot until right now too, because I'm in a totally different mode when we do the show. Yeah. But yeah, no, it is exciting actually, because that band's been you know, cooking away on the slow burner for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've listened to it almost every day on my walks.
Oh, thank you, man.
First song up is usually that song, because it's just, as you probably intended, it's that kind of song, right?
It's just summer, instant, summer vibes.
Yeah, instant feel good, explore the outdoors, get a bit free. That's the love I feel from it.
Again, there's two of us, there's myself and Barra, and that's kind of more of a Barrett song in terms of the composition of it. But, you know, the bass line is me, and I think Rory, the drummer, and Aoife, actually everybody contributed something.
Is that Frank on the electric guitar?
Frank on the electric guitar, awesome. With the twinkling leads. But I think really what's ended up happening with it is, I think it's definitely taken on quite a By the Way era Chili's feel, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. It's a bit of REM, got that sparkle, bit of some like slacker rock bands I love. There's a lot of little things in there, right?
Yeah. Go check it out. I thank you for the kind words. I think if you do enjoy that, we did a really goofy video for it. It's up on Spotify. It's everywhere you can get your music. Yeah. So it's called Papaya Whip. The band is called Drying Weather, which is what we Irish folk refer to as, you know, when it's sunny out and you can put your drying out on the line. All right, let's get started.
Thank you very much. Drink the Kool-Aid. Right, or the papaya
whip. Drink the Kool-Aid. Oh yeah. Right. First up, Fixed It All is the long-awaited second album from Paris Francis Parrish. That's P. What do you call that symbol? The A E. It's a half an A, half an E.
Oh, is there a word for that? There is.
Parrish. Yeah. So this is a band that was it. I believe you introduced me to Parrish, did you know?
Yeah, I introduced the whole shed of Toms to Parrish.
Yes, the whole jam.
We vibed on that big time.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Semi-finalists was their 2016 debut, and even though for some reason in the press junket for this album they've kind of made a point of distancing themselves from semi-finalists. For my money and Dylan's, and I know our good mutual friend JP Reed, this is like a stone-cold classic, like a stone-cold modern classic. Easily up there with all of the albums that made 2016 a banner year for new music. I think semi-finalists, it just walks that line between sort of alternative rock, indie, grunge, and then like a little bit of a, you can tell these guys listen to Helmet, you know, that kind of way.
Just about. They're just about on the cusp of that heaviness.
Oh, but very, very much so. Yeah, like it more so, I would say, like the Biffy B-side era of things, but really melodic, really memorable all throughout. Like all the songs just stick out. There's not really a bad moment on that album, and so on this album, like I said, they've sort of said, well, look, listen, we've moved on, we've teamed up with none other than Will Yip, which I have to say, excuse me, when I heard that, my ears immediately pricked up, because Will Yip, we would know from the likes of Gleamer, Turnstile, Quicksand, Citizen, Super Heaven, Balance and Composure. I mean, this guy, as far as I'm concerned, Will Yip is one of the best producers working today, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, okay, a Parrish album where they're saying we're going to be making a commitment to be heavier, and we're working with Will Yip, who's worked with Code Orange. I was like, I'll be interested to hear how that sounds. And it's good, right?
It sounds exactly what they promised, right?
Yes, it does.
Or intended. Very heavy off the bat, or at least in the guitars, it's a lot heavier. Oh, yeah. They're not exactly trading it completely for melodic, but they're going for grit more so this time.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't, you know, again, bands often have their perspective on their own work might be somewhat skewed. Anybody listening to Fix It All who's familiar with Semi-Finalists will recognize Parrish. You know, there's no question at all that this is the same band, right? But I mean, when Fix It All, or should I say Feaxed It All, clatters in with those just screaming bendies and these kind of beefy chugs and stuff, you're like going, okay, I could tell they've kind of leveled up a little bit. And then you've still got those really big melodic and anthemic choruses, the kind of Nirvana quiet loud thing that's going on in the middle eight. And the first chord is a very dreamy, shoegazy guitar tone, you know, that I would associate with Will Yip very much so. So really good start. That's a great song.
Yeah.
All the singles are excellent, right? Every single one is a standout.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. And some of the ones you wouldn't expect, like Mike and Susan, or You and I, some nice kind of, not doomish, but kind of slow plodding minor key kind of.
Yeah, You and I,
nostalgic things.
Huh?
Yeah.
Mm. You and I definitely, I think of all, you know, when you think about what the band have said, you know, that they're kind of going in a heavier direction, I think You and I is probably the one song that, for me, sounds like Parrish has perhaps stepped a little bit too far outside of their comfort zone in terms of they go for this sort of Alice in Chains type thing.
I was going to tip from the same ballpark as well, but with Soundgarden,
the latter day
Soundgarden, at least in the 90s. But yeah,
I definitely heard some Soundgarden, but for me that was more so on the track Albert Suffers. But I guess it's a different type of Soundgarden song that I think they're treading the footsteps on. Yeah. Soundgarden for sure.
Yeah, there is hints of the heavy metal more so than the grunge. Something that Tusky can take from a lot as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tusky for sure. I think it's a very bold choice to go for a descending semitone that, like, you and I, like, you know, you can't get much hookiness out of a ba ba. They managed to do a pretty good job, and I think actually Patrick Miranda, the guest vocalist who's the singer of the band Movements, I don't know them that well, but he actually really brings that song up a level, I think.
Yes.
You know, because he's got a very gritty, more hardcore delivery. It's like a hardcore emo type thing.
And not to say that the vocals off the bat in this album aren't heavier. They are. Archives has some great like raising of the voice and grit in the chorus.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And you hear that in 412 as well and stuff.
Huge. Uh-huh. Yeah, 412, really gritty. There's like it's like a great kind of, like, really pummeling kind of almost hardcore pre-chorus in that song. You're right. And then Mike and Susan, which is the track after, I think Matthias, the singer, really kind of shreds his voice. Like, he really reaches for those notes at the end.
Yeah. Violet.
Very effective song.
Is kind of Sum 41 party.
Ha-ha!
Did you get a bit of that?
You got Sum 41. I have Wheatus and Alien Ant Farm. I had the two.
I love it.
But we're in the same ballpark.
I just really love the intent of that feeling. It's good.
Yeah, it's got that like da 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 da. Like, it's, you know, it's really very, it's Weezer as well. It's very Weezer. Like the chorus, you know, in the chorus, it's got those octaves that come in. Extremely Blue Album, and then the solo is clearly a nod to Rivers Cuomo as well. In that song, Violet.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant song, though. You know,
it was very, it's really good. Very Fat Lip by the poolside.
Yes. Yeah.
It made me smile.
It did. No, I think there's loads of fun nods to bands. And bands that like you say, like we talked about Mike and Susan before, but, you know, I think that song is a touch of Smashing Pumpkins, but also a little bit of No Knife, who are a band that I talk about all the time. Nobody's ever heard of them, but they're a really fond band to my heart from the kind of late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I agree. You hear a lot of the Smashing Pumpkins in the solos in particular. Journey of the Pirate King, for example. Later parts of it have some pretty cool solos. And throughout this album, there's a lot of that kind of very fuzzed out, kind of wah-centric whittling,
yeah,
which I love.
I think Prairie King is probably the closest to their earlier work. I would say it's very melodic. It's kind of got like this, you know, the bass largely drives it. Similarly, yeah, it's to what they would have done on Semifinalists.
Semifinalists definitely sounds a little poppier in contrast.
Yeah, yeah.
And looking back at it, they've kind of done a reverse of what what's the band? Teenage Wrist.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. This is like Teenagerist in reverse. I can hear that for sure. couple of other fun things. I think there's a little bit of hum in the outro to 412, like space rock, kind of sludgy. Yeah. It's awesome. Really like that.
Very hypnotic.
I think there's a little bit of heavy, like a hair metal inspiration at the start of Hollow. It's kind of like the way the chug. Is. It's like a, sort of a chug melodic type thing going on, which is fun.
What do you think of Water Doctor?
Water Doctor is a lot of fun. Yeah, it's kind of... I get a little bit of surf rock or something. That, like... Do you know that kind of double stare? That da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Kind of reminds me of Waves or Best Coast or something like that.
Yeah, the latter part of the album got me a little more hooked to it, for sure. I grew to this very quickly. I'm glad they took the step into heavier...
Yeah.
Stuff, right?
I think, yeah, I mean, it's, I totally agree. I think this is, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. Like, at this stage, I think maybe the singles, if we take, you know, for me, the highlights are like the songs we already know a little bit, like Fix It All, Archives. I think we got a single release of Violet as well. And I think they're probably my three highlights. But then, like, kind of coming up from the rear, I think Mike and Susan, amazing. Hollow is really starting to grow on me. This, kind of a, something maybe of the first Paramore album, I think, to that song.
Yeah, I really, chorus. I actually really enjoy You and I maybe a lot more than you might.
Yeah, I think that's the weakest moment for me. So it's interesting that it's a highlight for you, is it?
Yeah, the gif on Spotify has dogs frolicking in slow motion through a field and it's quite weird in contrast to what the song's like. But yeah, I like it.
No, like it's good. I don't think it's bad.
Kind of sounds doomed, but really loved. Good album. Yeah. Great.
You know what I hear a little bit of actually, like throughout really, but particularly on Archives.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a bit of Dylan O'Connor in the guitar work.
Yes.
Or maybe you were heavily inspired by Parrish. I don't know which way around it is, but like in terms of you've got Matthias who does the kind of largely the sort of power chords and things like that, and then Frederick is the Frederick, if you want me to do my old French accent, but he would do like the leads, and I think having that dedicated lead guitarist in a band like this means that there is usually something happening, you know, there's usually some sort of a guitar melody going on.
There is still busy work singing. Going on, and that's a good combination.
It is and you know, another producer might have made this sound pretty cluttered. But I think Will Yip is just a master of space. You know, he just knows exactly where to place everything in the mix. Yeah,
and they're already a good enough band with that in Semifinalists. So they're just improving on something that's solid gold.
Yeah, dead right. No, for sure. I think this is a, you know, I mean, like I it's hard for me to say. Like, do you prefer this to Semifinalists?
Yes,
you do. Okay.
Yes, I went back. And Semifinalists was missing a heaviness that this had, but I think Semifinalists is a bit more hookier.
Yeah,
with Winona Ryder and stuff, and all that jazz. But that's not to say that this album's any less for that. It's just a different slice of them, and it's still catchy as fuck, right? Just a different thing.
Oh, incredibly so, and that's why I think, you know, if I think of like, you know, the singles that I've heard. Yeah. You know, kind of going back a few months. I think it's really just a matter of, like, Hollow is a song that in the last kind of week has wormed its way into my brain. And I think these songs might just take a little bit longer to get cemented. Right now, I would say Semifinalists probably a 10 out of 10 album. And I'll just give my score now. I think this is a 9 out of 10 album. But it's brilliant. It is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm there with you too. Yeah, favorite song, of course, is probably Albert Suffers.
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Love the acoustic guitars in that track are great. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a subtle but great touch.
Yeah. I like all the little elements in it. How about you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think I'm just going to have to be really basic. I think Fixed It All. Just right for right now, I cannot. That moment when the chorus blasts through the door, I mean, you can't get it. It's just great. Yeah. But it's a great album. So yeah, definitely go check it out. That's Fixed It All. And I like the artwork. I always like a mysterious.
I do. It's kind of horror.
It's like a guy cheering. He's cheering on a fake badminton game, I think.
Yeah, it's a window. It's a weird one.
It's a very strange photograph, but I love it. So it's Fixed It All by Parrish. P-A-E or I-S-H. So definitely go check that out. Like, that's your imperative, is to go and check that out, right?
God, I'm trying to remember the name of it, because like Enema, like Tool's Enema has it as well.
And it's in Encyclopedia as well. Here we are. Yeah. It's A-E. Yeah, well, what's it called, Wikipedia? What's it called? They've just written it out. Oh, I think it's, you know what? I think it's pronounced Ash.
Ash. Yes,
Ash,
it is.
Ash. Yeah, it is. Yeah, Ash. Yeah, we got it. We got it. All right, moving on. Next album comes from Girl in Red.
Yeah.
All right. Girl in Red.
Not Girl in Blue?
No. This is the Girl in Red. Marie Ulven from Huten in Norway, right? She's only 22, born in 1999. Extremely prolific considering her age. This is her debut album. It's called If It Could All Go Quiet. If I Could Make It All Quiet. Dylan, help me out here.
Give me a sec.
If I Could Make It Go Quiet. If I Could Make It Go Quiet is the name of the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, it comes off the back of a rake of singles that she's been releasing since,
really,
2015. Yeah, for years.
Haven't kept track.
Yeah, no. I've been aware of Girl in Red for a couple of years now, and she, particularly her song, I think it's called, it's either called Girlfriend or I Want to Be Your Girlfriend. I Want to Be Your Girlfriend. Brilliant song, right? And she's what's known as I should say she is the queer queen of bedroom pop. That's how she's described, and I think
that's apropos.
It's apropos, definitely. There's a very strong, you know, her kind of her gay identity very much in the lyrics, and bedroom pop up until this record was definitely a hallmark of her sound. It was quite lo-fi. This is different. This is produced by Mathias Telles. He's a Norwegian, you know, singer songwriter producer from a band called Young Dreams. I don't think there's anything we would have known him from before that he's done. Okay. But it's a pretty produced sound, all things considered. Would you agree?
It is. It's right up there with bands like Metric, right? That's what I can connect it to,
Metric,
from whatever I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Yeah, actually, I definitely hear that. Her own biggest inspiration is Taylor Swift. And I think depending on what light you catch her in, you can hear a little bit of that here, definitely.
There's a frankness in the lyrics that are quite Swifty. Right?
Yeah, there is, definitely. And I think quite Lana Del Rey at times as well.
Yeah. Maybe more Lana Del Rey. She definitely does not keep it as PG as Taylor Swift would.
No.
No, there is a, as she says, a horny love sickness to this whole album, and not just the song alone. It's very forlorn. Probably maybe due to just personal stuff during the pandemic. I'm not sure if this was pandemic.
This was announced well pre-pandemic. This has actually been on train for a long time. But I do think quite a few that the tracks were recorded in lockdown. Yeah. So, but
a lot of these feelings. I can put in context of a pandemic, magnifying the emotions even more to maybe relationships gone awry during this whole thing. The feelings are there, right?
There's kind of references which definitely would be pre-pandemic. I think is it Horny Love Sickness where she's kind of talking about being on tour and
New York,
like
stuff,
booty calls and things like this. So obviously that sort of tour lifestyle is she went out on tour, like tour of the US quite early. I think she was only 17, 18. This album actually starts with, I think she will be compared on this record quite a bit, I think, to Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell.
Okay.
Billie Eilish's brother and producer actually co-produced Serotonin, the first track. And I think Serotonin is the the Times Square billboard, to use her own lyrics. That's the one. That's the big single, Serotonin.
That is absolutely a good show for a big single.
Very,
very. I can relate to it in some ways.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very in a really, like, I hate to sound like an old man, but like in a real Gen Z way, I think there's a very much a like just incredible frankness to the lyrics about, you know, mental health and stuff. Intrusive thoughts is kind of the topic of that song, and it's done with a kind of Lord. I think it's quite similar to Lord in that it's got a little bit of a hip hop sort of rhythm to it, but then the chorus kicks in and it's a lot more it's kind of more like just dark pop.
Like you'd probably see like Body and Mind, for example, is very Amy Winehouse.
Yes.
Or Midnight Love is more so Body and Mind, I guess. There's kind of this bluesy,
it's funny you mentioned Amy Winehouse. I hear it. I definitely hear it.
This album's got a whole lot of real good stuff. Real good hills to it. Right.
You say Amy, it's funny though, you say Amy Winehouse. Do you know what? I think that's spot on. I've written down like modern Panic at the Disco or Fall Out Boy, but I think those are inspired by the exact same thing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's all inspired by
Amy
Winehouse.
They took the pop turn like that.
As
I said, this album definitely takes you through a variety of different song types. When you think it's ending, I'll Call You Mine, and I would feel like this, come on, and that's a whole other vibe of energy that I love.
Yeah.
I really love. Yeah, it's kind of lo-fi.
I'll Call You Mine. I'll Call You Mine. Towards the end of the album, it gets a little closer to what she had done before. I think I'll Call You Mine it's guitar. It's like, it's almost like sort of Citizen or something. It's a little bit like that kind of shoegaze.
It's got a nice
thing.
Wash to it. I really enjoy the kind of you can surf on it. It's delightful. Yeah.
It's a lovely chord progression, that song. And then it would feel like this is kind of an instrumental outro to the album. I think a late day highlight of the album is the full stop song, like the kind of period or whatever it is.
That's a nice one.
Just the dot. Absolutely love that song. I mean, it's got those finger pick guitar chords and the piano notes that kind of come in on a breeze, and then that sort of, you know, the honey, I'm not doing so well. It just builds and builds and builds. That's fantastic.
I love you, stupid bitch. Just for the fact that it's called that and the chorus
you
is that.
Stupid bitch. And actually, my fiance, she was listening to, I don't know how, but there's two versions on Spotify. There's a clean version and the
really
version.
So
she was listening to it and she kept on being like, what's that song, you stupid slut? And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, because there's a gap when it's like, you stupid, and then she always heard the word, she was like, it's probably slut. And I was like, it's you stupid bitch.
You could have just done it in reverse. You stupid nyrp.
You stupid shit. It's just silence on the clean version, so it's just funny that she filled in a word that's even more offensive. Her brain automatically filled that in. But no, that's a great song. Do you know what, it's the more I listen to it, I have to say, like, the more I think its tricks are quite easily revealed. I mean, it really is just like a Jonas Brothers style, like four chord pop, like very squeaky clean pop.
But it has
rock
some
track,
stuff that
good.
I really fucking like. The very underplayed, I would say more so All Twins solo. It's not even a solo, it's more kind of like an ambient middle eighth, I guess.
It's
really,
right.
Really subdued guitar echoing bits and clatterings. I really enjoy that.
Yeah,
a lot
the
of
ending,
nice space usage.
There's kind of a halftime like that where the drums kind of start freaking out, but it's quite a slow pulse. That's really interesting, and that's not something that any of those artists would have done. That's really good, I think. Yeah. And I think your man, Matthias Telles, you can hear a little bit of like almost sort of post-punk on that second track, did you come in the middle eighth. There's this weird creepy vocal thing, and it's quite spacious and kind of frosty, and that just reminded me a little bit of that band that we covered earlier in the year, Radio Supernova. Which was a lot of fun. I thought that was great. Lots of variety. I don't like the slightly more like fashionable stuff. Not that I dislike it, but okay. I think it's less successful. The tracks like Midnight Love or Apartment 402. I think they're good. Like, I don't think they're bad, but I prefer the slightly more upbeat stuff. But yeah,
I agree with Apartment 402 anyway. But I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Midnight Love is good. It's got that kind of like EDM pulse to it.
It's got a good pulse.
It's good.
Nighttime kind of vibe. But yeah, as I said, like three different types of three or four even types of different songs during this, which is great. You normally don't get that much variety with something like this, but here it is. Maybe Serotonin Did You Come kind of blend a bit, but then the rest of the album kind of gets off on a nice variety. That's my only qualm, really, right?
Yeah,
I'm hooked on this.
I mean, it's fantastic. It is really, really good. I have to say, I'm very impressed. And it's so different from, like, to put it in a little bit of context, like, Girl in Red would be from a reasonably similar lineage of Beba Doobie in terms of their early stuff and, like, the bedroom pop thing. And then, you know, to hear, like, the two albums are poles apart. This definitely is a produced, like, solo pop album a la, you know, Taylor Swift or Billie Eilish or, you know, take your pick. Probably not quite as poppy as something like Carly Rae Jepsen, but like,
I think I prefer it over everything you just listed.
But it retains, you know, whereas BBDB went like full 90s alternative rock and we loved it, this has decided to move with the times and be a kind of contemporary pop record, but it does it in its own sort of sense of personality. I think it's very strong.
It is, and even though it's a real fucking lovelorn album, and thing kind of a bit of a pet peeve with that I have, naturally is just by virtue of it being kind of that thing. It's hard to write an interesting one, really. But I think the frankness comes out with the personality, and it's just fun. They have fun with it, and it's not too self-deprecating. It's like, it feels like a healing ritual, this album, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
right.
No, it does, and it doesn't. It's so short. Like, what is it? It's like 35 minutes, I think. 33. It's shorter even than that. It's, you know, so it's in and out. It does exactly what it intends to, and it doesn't stick around for too long. I think that's a virtue when it comes to a pop album.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, dude. Thank you for getting this on the list.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's good. It's really, really good. Favorite track?
I'll Call You Mine.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, good.
I'm giving this a solid 9.
Oh,
real good. Damn. Real good.
Okay. Real good. All right.
I've had this nonstop.
I'm so glad to hear it, man. That's made my day. It's brilliant. So I'm actually going to give it an 8 myself. I don't think I'm quite there. Just in terms of a couple of the tracks, still haven't like solidified themselves as much, but I'm so glad that you're as keen on it. But I'd be giving it a solid 8 for sure. And I think my favorite track is probably the Full Stop song, aka Honey, I'm Not Doing So Well. Yeah. Which I love. It's really good. I'll be putting this one on my long list for the year for sure. All right, that's again, it's a If I Could Make It Go Quiet by Girl in Red. I got it. All right. You've been waiting for it. I've been waiting for it. Let's talk about it. Nurture.
It's been a while.
Speaking of long-awaited second albums.
Oh, my God.
Nurture comes 7 years after the release of Worlds, the debut album from Porter Robinson.
You know, like, the time I'm taking to do my stuff, and then I see, like, I think to myself, why is he taking so long? No, I understand. I understand, because it's so... I can only imagine how he feels getting this out.
Yeah. Yeah, this comes at the end of a very arduous production cycle, I think, that involved a lot of huge amount of self-doubt and self-reinvention. And what results is an album that bears very little resemblance to his previous work, I think, right off the bat. But can you give us a little bit of... Because I think you very much introduced me to Porter Robinson, so I feel like you're the man that should... give a little bit of an overview of who he is and what he does and how we've kind of gotten to this point.
I mean, I guess, you know, he deals with a lot of like introspective like tech, like electronic slash EDM stuff. Very modern flourishes of that. He started, of course, in the early 2010s.
Yeah.
Right. This is what his second album, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Just the second. Second album.
He had a remix one. But he's been so prolific. With like, in that whole music scene. That, you know, he's gone on to have his own festival.
Yeah.
Being a guy who only has two albums. And that's how well respected he is in the community of this, which is so vivid and flourishing at the moment. And just that alone goes to show how well regarded he is in this industry.
Yeah, he is for sure. And he would have come up with like, well, certainly with the likes of Skrillex, you know, around that time. And he got involved, you know, like in the early 2010s, as you mentioned, and he got involved in, I would say some fairly like generic for the time, sort of dubstep or complextro, which is a genre that I'm you know, quite fond of. And I would have listened to a lot back in the day.
Yeah.
But then moving along to his own sort of solo work or
he also had like an album called Virtual Self, which is the album I forgot to mention last year, week. Or last podcast, I guess. Virtual Self was his kind of alter ego album, which is kind of a lot more like techno inspired, like club techno. It's really fucking good. And that was 3 years ago, I would say. It's like an EP. It's really good.
That's super interesting. I didn't know about that at all, to be honest.
No, I was just listening to it today and I realized that's him as well. So yeah.
I'll have to listen to that. But I think, you know, he kind of went from that sort of very typical for the time, like sort of dubsteppy, like electro house type stuff, to worlds which retains a little bit of that. You know, it's got a bit of chiptune. It's very melodic, but very song driven as well. And I think Worlds is a really fantastic album. You know, it's really good, and then, you know, a long break of self doubt and self reinvention and stuff. And you know, we talk about these albums, sometimes they come along, albums I think like Random Access Memories or like the Mouse on the Keys album we talked about a couple of years ago, and maybe you can think of a few other examples, but where an artist really kind of swings for the fences and tries to make a Trez was the Mouse on the Keys album, but you know, where an artist sort of says, okay, I'm gonna make something that's kind of expansive and has a lot of space and has a lot of kind of motifs and musical ideas and sort of tries to more tell a cinematic story rather than being a collection of songs. I think that's what Nurture is to a large extent. Would you agree?
Yeah. It's totally one for one a passion project.
Yeah.
The only way it could take this long is if full confidence was in it at one point, then it could only get to this point from that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it sort of starts as it means to continue in terms of, it begins with a song called Lifelike, and, you know, you've got birds singing, there's piano and violin.
Kind of sounds like violins and pianos swirling around a beeping machine, possibly hospital related. It almost sounds like that, and then it brings life into something that may be a bit more mortally wounded. That's totally kind of the feel I get through this whole thing. That kind of sums up the album as well, right?
There's a huge amount. I mean, it's very much piano driven. Like it's not really thumping EDM. There's a little bit of that, like
later on.
You know, get your wish definitely has a little bit of that. Look at the sky. You know, when the bass kind of kicks in. And the snares going and stuff like that. There are moments on this that do reach those heights. But there's a lot of piano.
There's other
atmospherics
that he hasn't touched before.
Sound samples, glitching. Uh-huh. Little nods to his past. You know, where things go half time and slightly dubstep inspired. But really, for the most part, this is like, it feels like electronic music coming from a very organic space.
Yes. I think Snail's House was a band I showed you a while back that has a similar vibe to this, Ujiko.
Yeah, can hear that.
Yeah, and then you've got just traditional hymn with like Something Comforting, I think is the most kind of old school to an extent, at least in the chorus.
Yeah, I think Something Comforting is probably, it's the most traditional, definitely.
Close to almost drum and bass in the drums, right?
Yeah. Pretty there's a real N64 vibe to the fake Spanish guitar at the start of that song. Yeah. There's a lot of weird fake, like very cheap sounding synthesizers, and I know it's intentional. Like, do you ever watch Brody Quest? Do you ever watch that? Where Adrian Brody goes on a trip around the world. Well, there's a very particular, I always associated with the electric guitar setting on a cheap Yamaha keyboard, but Look at the Sky has that it's a very Brody Quest style electric guitar.
it's not too far off the charm of like an N64 MIDI.
Which
is why I love it so much. I guess naturally, a lot of the songs as well kind of have that sampled effect, Get Your Wish or Mother. Yeah. They have these kind of little intro bits, and then they come in Get Your Wish comes in with kind of a drum fill that partners with the synth. It's just a great kind of coupling where the drums do the same thing as the synth, and it gets a little complex, and it's nice to hear it kind of sounding a bit more like a band than just an EDM artist as well.
It
requires
a
lot of effort
drums,
to find the balance.
The acoustic drums when they come in are really cool. I think Get Your Wish is one of them. There's a few sort of throughout the record that have more organic sounding drums, and that's really good. I think on Get Your Wish, I absolutely love this kind of that there's this kind of jazzy piano chord progression at the start of that song. That's
the one I was talking about.
So nice. I absolutely love that song.
It's very kind of, that's very Snail House, very cafe kind of.
Very,
pots and pans and stuff. And it's really cool.
Lo-fi hip hop beats.
Wind Tempos is an interesting fourth song, and it's kind of the third song because it's kind of a breather. It's almost like a zenning out kind of piece. Very, very interesting musically.
It's too early in the album, though. I think that's what you're driving at, and I think you're right.
Maybe.
It's like a 6 minute. I
would have probably just swapped it with Musician. Right after, to be honest, but it's fine. I kind of skip it sometimes if I'm not in the mood. Because it's a long one. But it's got parts, some really cool parts to it.
I think some of the parts of it are this. It starts off with this. It kind of sounds like Olafur Arnalds when he was doing his kind of algorithmic pianos, and then there's a little bit of Owen Pallett or Final Fantasy as well.
Very
chamber pop. Very music. Joe Hisaishi as well, though. Very Ghibli in terms of the piano.
Very breathy. A Musician is probably the one song I think does not fly as much as it could. It kind of stays on the same. I like the intro. I think the chorus falls a little bit flat, mainly because it doesn't explode as much as I would like it to. Like something like Get Your Wish or Comforting would do, or Mirroring, a lot of these songs. I don't know. It's... right after Musicians when the album really gets me going.
To stay on Musicians for a second, now I would agree with you that I think Musician is probably the weakest moment, but it's maybe representative of a few of issues that I have with the album overall.
Sure.
In that I think, well, this is only in Musician, but there's that kind of like do dip it do dip it dip it do at the start, which I think is a sample from a song he never released, like a collaboration.
It sounds very Jet Set Radio, actually.
You say Jet Set Radio, I say Arc Music Factory, like mid 2000s, like let's get
Jet Set Radio.
let's get Timbaland in to rap about like a banana, like a completely hollow.
It sounds like the old trap beaty, but
I think it's
or break
not great. I have to say, but the generally it's more so that it's the Owl City effect, right?
Maybe
it's the combination of the auto-tune and the really, really syrupy, cutesy saccharin melodies. Like, this whole album is very much like major key, very very sweet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and very cute.
It is.
All
there's a
right.
good. There's a really good heart behind it all, and I personally kind of like that. I agree.
No, I like it. Yeah. I just think when he can balances it a little bit on, you know, which he does on lots of the tracks, like Something Comforting, on Unfold, you know, there's loads of tracks where there's a really good balance. I think even Look at the Sky, that one's pretty full on, but you know, generally throughout the record he does a good job. But I think Musician is just the one where for me it just tips the scale into this is just too, it's so over the top cute that it almost sounds like children's music or something, and it's not for me, I have to say.
I like some of the approaches to the effect to that, maybe more so in Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do.
Chip Tanaka,
I would say Chip Tanaka, more so kind of Katamari Damacy.
Okay.
There's also that Japanese style of like homemade kind of chip pop. Really, really interesting stuff, right? And it's very simple, but very complex, right?
Yeah, I think that one is fine. It has more of an interlude vibe to me. I think it goes on a wee bit too long. But it does lead into Mother, which I think is one of the more interesting tracks. Like, it almost sounds like it could have been, if Bring Me the Horizon had really stuck with that medicine, mother tongue type style of song, you know, that Mother could fit into that mold.
Yeah, it's continuing off the Get Your Wish template, which I really like. This big, booming mid-tempo stuff, which is nice to just have a walk to. This album is totally full of that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Dull Scythe is an interesting one as well. There's a lot of interesting ones with long bits that are very experimental.
Yeah, that one's kind of like an ASMR type thing. It's sort of
stuttery,
sort of swirling around and stuttering.
But then it heads into this Mirror's Edge style piano laden thing near the halfway point to a whole different kind of feel of a song. I like that. I like it requires a bit of patience to get to that, but it's fun.
I think video games there's a lot of video games and films in this, more so even than like his contemporaries. And I think in interviews he's been talking a lot about Wolf Children, which is a great movie if you haven't seen it.
It is
fantastic film, but you know, but it definitely feels like it's taken inspiration from other forms of art than music in a lot of cases, you know. Although I think Blossom has a fair bit of White Album era Paul McCartney, you know, finger style acoustic guitar. Yeah. It's that's again a nice, the vocals.
It's good. It's good. I know he's had trouble finding comfort in his own natural voice, which is why I guess like the change to tuning it differently and doing different effects and stuff was kind of done in the past, and I absolutely commend him for taking the step to use his voice more, because he's got a really nice voice, a really lovely
he does. It's just when it's pitched up so he sounds like a woman all the time, I mean, I get it, and it's a fun, you know, particularly this one track where he basically has a duet with himself. What is that track? Is it Mother?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's Mother, yeah. You know, and those kind of things are really interesting, where you're kind of going, oh, cool, because I had to look it up. I was like, well, I think this sounds like...
Hatsune Miku?
You know, he's got a guest vocal. You know, like there's a woman that's doing like guest vocals throughout this album, and it's actually just him with his voice pitched up and stuff, and that's cool. But he does lean on it really heavily all throughout the album, and I find by the end I'm a bit like, oh, because it's a full hour of this album. But there's interesting stuff all the way through to the end.
It's a staple of it. I mean, like Hanamanaguchi kind of do that as well, and heck, they did a collaboration with Hatsune Miku, so you know, it's just a thing people like with this.
Blending
the J-pop with the not pop from Japan, right? In the weebish way possible, in a nice, very, very cool way. Very inspired. They get it. They get that feeling that J-pop can only provide. Fucking Something Comforting is great. I remember hearing him play that at his festival last year. Just him in a room. That was like the first festival. That was the first gig I saw during the pandemic, was him doing that, and I was like, "Whoa, what's the song? I haven't heard this one before." And it's here it is in actual album form a year later.
Yeah, Exactly. No, it is. It's good.
You later.
He does lean very heavily on the in a way that I don't remember him doing quite the same extent before. Is that it was kind of like, you know, when you take your voice and turn it into a synthesizer like that.
Oh, yes.
Thing, which is quite trendy at the moment, but you know that turns me off slightly. But I think overall, like, I've kind of come and I've been in swings and roundabouts with this album, and that sometimes I listen to it and be like, ah, like this is like on a level with those kind of ambitious albums. But then I think the way that what I've settled on is, I think it's like, it's something of a flawed album in terms of, for my taste, I think there's too much kind of waiting around for stuff to happen, and there's a little bit too much, like, it's too sugary sweet for me at times. But I definitely admire, I think, perhaps, for what he wanted to do with this album, and for, like, in terms of self-healing and kind of building up his confidence again, I could definitely see that this is, you know, this has ticked that particular box. But, like, as far as an album that I just think by the end, it's just gotten a bit too much for me. It's just, it's very full on, you know?
Yeah, I like a lot of the messages, like, as much as you say, like, will I still be a creative, alive person a year from now? That kind of...
I hope so.
Yeah, like, fucking honestly, that kind of hopeful message that he has, not just for himself, but through this music to everybody, it gets into your brain and it makes you feel a lot of emotions.
Yeah,
like, I listened to this album at my worst points.
Right? That's what it is.
Best points. Yeah. And yeah, like, we're kind of getting to the end of the album with, like, Unfold, which is a great kind of... kind of the only collaboration in this album, right?
Yeah. Yes, Totally Enormous Extinct Dinosaurs, who I've 100% heard of, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head any of the tracks that he's worked on.
It's got a nice slow rumble to it. And
it does. It does. I get almost, like, Amy Lee vibes in the chorus. I don't know why, but it feels like kind of Evanescence-y, or... You know, like, kind of more of a, like, an epic kind of metal type vocal. I don't know why, but yeah. But that's a good song. I like that song a lot. It's one of my favorites, actually.
Very,
I
like very, like, yeah. LLLL kind of close
yes.
to that.
Yes. 4L, please.
Yeah, 4L. And it ends pretty nicely. Pretty nicely. The casual kind of end song. It's there, right?
It doesn't add. Yeah, trying to. It's nice, but I think on an album that's already, you know, like 55 or 56 minutes, I don't think it adds a great deal, you know, to the whole package. Like, I think you could have finished on Unfold, and that would have been a perfectly good finish for the record. But, you know, but overall, it's a very admirable effort. I'm glad we have him back. I will say, like, I'm probably one of those dickheads that would say, oh, I wish it was a little bit more like Worlds, you know, but for what he needed to
we have enough bands that kind of try and ape Worlds these days. I'm glad he kind of stepped off that a bit. Yeah. Now he has Worlds plus stuff that sounds like this together to play at gigs. That's great. That's a great thing to have, like it or not.
Absolutely.
Extra yeah. forms of songs.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm giving this an 8. Really fucking good 8. I feel absolutely incredible going for walks through the forest with this album. Once again, a lot of these albums have that, are getting me through the tough times of my weeks these days, this is at the top of the list. Because it captures you. If you're in any kind of vibe relative to what he was feeling in this album will speak to you, truly. Mm. My favorite song is Unfold.
Ooh, okay, yeah, that is a strong one. That's definitely a strong song. I'm going to give it a 7. A very good 7, because I really admire, like, the ambition, and there's been moments where I've listened to this album and been like, oi, not for me, and then there's been other moments where I've listened to this album and thought, this is really ambitious and fantastic. So I think a 7 is the right score for where I'm at with it right now. But you know, there's a huge amount of dexterity on display here. It might be a little bit too after talking about Girl in Red, right? But I think it might be almost a little bit too hard on sleeve, or a bit too confessional for my taste. But all the same, it's really, really good. So
I think there's no other way around that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have to get it out, that's going
to
be
you
it.
You have to get it out. Yeah. Yeah. True. So that's Nurture by Porter Robinson. And that concludes the new album section of the podcast, which brings us to maybe one of the more interesting conversations that we're going to have around Time Machine. We're going back to 2012 to talk about Lindsay Stirling, who was introduced to the world on America's Got, well, not the world, but introduced to the TV audience, right, in 2010 on America's Got Talent as a hip-hop violinist. And she made it all the way to the quarterfinal. And then she got absolutely eviscerated by Piers Morgan. And we all know that Piers Morgan's opinion is not worth a damn, right? So, so she basically she was pushed, I think, to put on a choreography, for that is her thing. She dances and plays the violin. That was way too ambitious to be able to actually play an instrument and perform competently. So her violin playing suffered a bit. But anyway, that's what Lindsay Stirling brings to the table, right? She plays violin to a contemporary, I'm not going to say hip hop, I think that's hilarious, it's nothing to do with hip hop, to a sort of a contemporary electronic backing, right? So Dylan, please go off. How do you know Lindsay Stirling?
From YouTube, from the videos, from the ambitious ass location on location videos. It's
right
how a lot of people probably found your stuff, right?
Not me, but yeah, really? But you.
Yeah, no.
How far back are we talking?
Crystallize.
Oh, that's probably yes. The, yeah,
I'm one of the 245 million people who watched that video.
Yeah, Crystallize seems to have been
violin.
Dubstep violin. See, that's how I got to know her, right? Because I at that time in 2011, 2012, I really was just, I would listen to anything with the dubstep label on it, you know? Stuff that was a very questionable quality. Yeah. And then some great stuff, you know, stuff that's, I think, stood the test of time. But, you know, you couldn't move for dubstep in like that sort of 18-month, two-year period between 2010, 2012. And you know, Lindsay Stirling, I think in some ways on this album and on Crystallize and so on and so forth, in some ways really capitalizes on that in a really smart way, right? Because she's an incredibly talented violinist and this style of music largely actually suits having a solo violin on top. And then in other ways, it's also a product of its time in terms of, you might agree with me or disagree with me, but largely having a producer who isn't super comfortable in the particular genre of dubstep. So the tracks that lean, I think that lean more heavily on that subgenre are maybe some of the less successful tracks, and the tracks where the producer is in a bit more of his comfort zone in like that kind of 90s house trance area, I think those are the more successful tracks.
Yes, I would say for example, like Stars Align has that, the last song. To an extent.
You've picked a little bit of an outlier. Okay. I didn't know any of this. I'll just tell you. So Dylan found it through YouTube. My context is my friend Ronan was like, you need to listen to this. Basically just like, listen to this. This is mad. This is like violin.
Hey, violin boy.
Electronic. It was probably Crystallize as well, to be fair, Dylan. But it was very much more so, listen to this. And I downloaded the album. And really, that was the beginning and the end of it. I was like, this is really cool, really catchy.
She also did a Pokemon dubstep remix. That was another one I saw. Yeah, yeah.
So she's apparently known for all these covers. Fair play. Yeah. Like, that's what she apparently was known for. But for me, I think the first track that I heard of hers, it wasn't Crystallize, it was actually Electric Daisy Violin, the first track of this album. And that's how I got into her. But that's the general template that all these four, right? She was on America's Got Talent. She'd already gained a bit of notoriety on YouTube. And then I think she was able to leverage that publicity to get into the studio with some producers and create an album of backing tracks with her original violin parts on top. And Stars Align, just since you mentioned it, is one of three producers who are not the main producer on this. And the producer on that track is Poet Named Life. Have you ever heard of him?
No, actually, no.
Well, you'll know who I'm talking about. For about 6 years was the official DJ of the Black Eyed Peas, and he produced The End, which is the album that has, you know,
another one.
What's the song? Oh my God.
Boom Boom Pow.
I got a feeling, Boom Boom Pow, you know, Meet Me Halfway, all those tracks, and the follow up at the beginning. So he produced that, and I think Stars Align is probably the most professional production job on the album. I mean, that still sounds great. It's huge.
Yeah, it kind of has that sawtooth bass kind of synth to it. It's pretty. It's got a good bit of grit on it.
Yes. It's definitely the grittiest production for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. More in line with like whatever Korn were using with their dubstep album was something in part with this as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
The rest,
and
is,
I think, there's one other track. I think Moon Trance.
Moon Trance. Yes.
That's, yeah. Even though it has that kind of, it's ever so slightly cringe Hall of the Mountain King thing. That you know, the ba 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 ba. It kind of has that going on. But the actual sort of drop in it is much
stronger. Really good. Legitimately really good. Yeah,
and that's another outside producer called Fixin. The rest of it is produced by a guy called Marco G, who, judging by his website, has never done anything else. Like, he just, this is like Lindsey Stirling's debut album is like his entire bio. Not bad.
I mean, like,
pretty good, right?
I think I this.
At its most successful on a track like Shadows, incredible, right?
Yeah, Shadows is pretty good. Brilliant. It's got this kind of Celtic flourish.
Oh.
It's something off the coast of Kerry. I don't know.
It's got much more of a like a Deadmau5 thing going on, I think, than like Skrillex or something. It's great. Whereas I think maybe if you take one of his more like dubsteppy tracks, they're a bit more like, he sounds like he knows the dubstep goes like whoop, 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 but he's not quite exactly sure where to put them. I think all the talk about production. Yeah, go ahead.
They're almost backers that kind of work for the violin's purpose.
Yeah,
at least in these initial albums. I'm not too familiar with the new stuff, but I'm sure there was kind of the quality has kind of upped since.
Yeah,
when it comes to like,
oh, it has. It definitely has, and it comes and goes on this album as well. Because I think there's lots of songs on here that like that where the backing track is actually much more considered, and it actually loops in with what she's playing on the violin in a really cool way. So you know, there are bits of that on this, but I think for the most part, the star of the show and the reason why we've talked around the production and stuff like that, like the songs, you know, some of them are stronger than others, but really what's strong throughout, I think, is the violin work, right? It's incredible.
It is. It's astonishingly good. I mean, you know better than me the intricacies of how hard it is to play violin over any almost any other stringed instrument, to be honest. To this degree,
nearly. I mean, you know, what she does here is she really mixes, you know, right from the start on like Electric Daisy Violin. You know, she writes these violin parts that are designed to mimic the sound of an arpeggiator or a synthesizer.
Yeah,
and you know, that ticka 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 ticka.
She almost reminds me of a Dave Mustaine on violin.
Yeah,
with the amount of kind of that almost heavy metal kind of guitarings that are in violin form here.
Yeah. Then on Crystallize, what you get is much more so classically inspired melodies, or occasionally folk. She's like quite a lot of folk inspired melodies here, and like it's a really interesting combination. That you know that she probably, much to the chagrin of like chin strokey classical music fans, but I think this album did make it to the top of the classical charts. But you know, but really, like, you know, Transcendence is another one that has a kind of more of a classical feel to it, and so when she gets a bit of breathing room to do the slightly longer notes and then like launch into the very kind of intricate, fast-paced, electronic inspired violin parts, like that, it's really amazing to listen to.
It's hypnotic, dude. As a musician, I can't make sense of a lot of it, right? I have an idea, but I cannot make sense of the speed in which she hits these things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, it's true. And like you say, I've like 16 or 17 years of violin training, and like I would never, even when I still played with any degree of regularity, like I would never be able to attempt anything like this. It's, you know, it's really very impressive. And I think what's even more impressive is for what I've only discovered now, right? Because I didn't know any of this context. I didn't know that Lindsey Stirling was on America's Got Talent. I even was only vaguely aware that she was like a YouTube personality or a YouTube person. Yeah. And apparently she's also one of the like spokespeople for Mormonism, which is a whole other thing, right?
But
she's from she's from Arizona, but I think she went to like Brigham Young University, and she's kind of considered like one of the poster children for like, we're like Mormons could be cool too. Look at Lindsay Sterling, right? I didn't know any of this stuff, but so I didn't know that this album was probably some kind of a cynical move to leverage some TV publicity into a career. I'm not saying cynical on her part. I'm saying, I don't know what label this was released on, but you know, it may well have been a kind of a opportunistic move, like to bankroll this album. But I think because you can't really auto-tune a violin, you have to just record it as it is for it to sound good.
Yeah,
it still has a heart and soul to it. You know, it really does.
It does. It's a great contrast to the very much polished kind of dubby electronics we have. Like we love. We're both pretty comfortable with it. To be honest, I have no qualms with it. I think it kind of washes over a bit for me. But the violin is the part that really kind of adds a good foil to that.
Yeah. Yeah, without the violin, this would be a very bland, like, you know, at times, YouTube audio library, like copyright-free music, like level electronic album. But really, like, because of the addition of Lindsay Sterling, you know, and her violin playing, it just elevates the whole thing up way, way, way above, you know. And I'm just looking at this record label, by the way. They only ever had 5 releases as far as I can see. So, you know, maybe it wasn't such a cynical move that I'm suggesting. But anyways, I think it's just an interesting example of incredible performance, just elevating the entire album. I think that's really what it's an example of.
Yes, it truly is. I was listening to the later stuff, and I think her evolution has blended the two a little nicer since this.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, she does a lot. I mean, Stars Align. I could probably do without the like da 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 da. I'm like, just write some lyrics. But yeah, she can sing, and you know, she sings a little bit on this album. She just kind of oohs and ahs, which work quite well. But I think she leaned very heavily in her later work, which I'm not super familiar with, I'll be honest, but I have listened to it a little bit. And she leans very heavily into guest spots, you know, guest vocalists. Yeah. Rivers Cuomo, for example.
Amy Lee, for example.
Christina Perry.
Fucking so Amy Lee pretty, on the latest
yeah,
one.
That's yeah, great. Some star-studded, you know, some pretty Lizzie star-studded Hale. Characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I actually considered her latest album for the show, but I it left me a little bit cold on first listen, so I didn't...
Okay.
I didn't, but Brave Enough, her third album seems to be the one that people gravitate towards. I think I might give that another listen because she's so talented that it's hard to imagine anything that she does going too far wrong.
Yeah, and the videos are truly incredible. If you're gonna watch anything that's of this caliber, there's not a lot. There's not a lot like of location tracking to capture the song's energies. She really has a good eye for that and good ear as well, right? Yeah.
But like I say, I mean, she's definitely, you know, she's well able to like capitalize on her successes, and you know, she went on to come second in Dancing with the Stars, if you can believe that.
Oh my god! Yeah.
So you know, so it's but good for her. Yeah, I think in the music industry, if you can carve out your own little niche and you can make it work, you know. Yeah. To be able to make a living as a touring musician, as a solo violinist in this day and age is not easy, and she's done it with a degree of aplomb. She's clearly extremely unique, you know, so we have to just give her credit and say that this album, it's not perfect, like it has its issues, but I still think, even though it came on the back of a sort of a fad, like a musical fad of sort of 10 years ago,
yeah,
there's still,
I mean,
loads to love about it, I think.
There was like a huge thing of like, you know, who else? Two cellos, a few others that kind of go in that trend-setting vibe.
Yeah. Cello more so, yeah.
Yeah, during like the cusp of like when YouTube money became a thing, right? These were the ones that kind of took that by storm without getting any of the waning parts that happen lately that makes it so hard for new people to kind of have a living with YouTube. Yes. That these early trendsetters kind of like kept going with or dropped off catastrophically, and she's kept on going, right?
She has, like, she's had remarkable longevity. Sorry, the All Music review is so short. It almost bears repeating. They didn't even give it a star rating, which I find funny, because I don't think I've ever seen a review on All Music that doesn't have a star rating. But it's just this: the eponymous debut album from YouTube sensation and America's Got Talent quarterfinalist Lindsay Stirling, the colourful and uncommonly spirited classical, hip-hop, rock, country, modern dance, and Legend of Zelda Elder Scrolls loving violinist, features 10 original tracks that dutifully reflect all of those aforementioned styles and influences with moxie despair, propelled by the engaging electronic and dubstep-influenced single Crystallize, which yielded 11 million views in less than 2 months when Holy it was shit. Released in its video form in early 2012. Stirling's debut carves out a unique new niche in the classical crossover genre. Like, four sentences, that's it. But, you know, it is what it is. I have quite an emotional connection to quite a few of these songs. You know, that might be history and stuff like that, so I'd be really interested to hear somebody who's coming off this completely fresh, listening to tracks like Electric Daisy Violin, Crystallize, Shadows, you know, Stars Align. There's some fantastic stuff in here, I think.
Yeah, no, totally, totally.
Moon Trance as well, brilliant.
Yeah, no, I can live with this. I can live with this for quite a while, you know. Yeah. It really gets you in a rhythm of things that I quite enjoy that I don't get from anything else. There's like a sense of easy listening mixed with just tracks you can exercise to as well. There's the whole combination of stuff. And it's a bit formulaic, but it's good formulaic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I just listen. It's a quirky one.
It is.
It's not my favorite album of all time, but you know what? It's an album that I actually kind of do go back to quite a bit, and I just thought it was a fun little throwback. So that's what is your favorite track actually out of all of them? Is it still Crystallize?
No, it's not. Let me just get it up here. Yeah. Probably. Shadows.
Yeah, Shadows is fantastic. I think I'll probably take Electric Daisy Violin.
Yeah. I get you.
Very good.
Shadows just has the Irish change I love. So yeah.
Yeah, Shadows is amazing. Yeah, Shadows is absolutely fantastic. All right, well, listen, that's Lindsay Stirling from 2012, and that is our show for this week. So, as I say, thank you for listening this week. Thank you for listening if you have for the last 4 years. It does really mean a lot, and it's always good fun to to chat about music whenever we can, you know.
Yeah. So, I can't believe we started this off on a weekly basis.
Oh dear God!
I don't know how some certain other podcasts do it, but I guess they get paid. So who
cares? No, I don't know how certain other podcasts do it. Review more albums and have jobs. Do you like kind of way? Like, I could understand if you're doing it as your full time gig, and you know you were earning big bucks off. I'm not saying we're not earning huge amount of money off ad sponsorships, but I am. It's a huge amount of work, and I think you know that can't be ignored. So once a week was pretty insane, but twice a week I think is just right. Twice a week. Once every 2 weeks. Don't get any ideas. I got to cut this off.
Every Wednesday and Sunday.
Yeah. It'll be like a soap opera if we're not careful. But listen, thank you so much for listening, and we will speak to you all in the very near future.
Ciao.
Bye.